Our scripture reading this morning comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We'll be reading verses 6 through 10. 1 Corinthians 10, verses 6 through 10. Now these things took place for example for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be adulterers, as some of them were, as it is written. The people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did. And 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by the serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer.
Good morning, everyone. You can turn down your Bibles back to Numbers chapter 16. We're going to pick up there in just a moment. Numbers 16, we're going to spend quite a bit of time in that chapter this morning. Before we get into the lesson, I do want to highlight several things, given that Vacation Bible School starts a week from tonight. Before I say anything about that, I first want to thank those of you who helped with the clothing drive yesterday, and especially Sherry Dempster, and I probably by extension should thank her family, because I know they put a lot of work and a lot of time into organizing that, and there's a lot of clothes that get stored, sometimes at their house and in other places as well, but we appreciate those who came out and helped with that in some way. I also want to thank Ben Schaefer. Yesterday, Ben spent some time at the flea market off of Highway 25 to help advertise and promote Vacation Bible School, and so we appreciate him doing that. And I want to encourage all of us, especially over this next week, whether it's word of mouth, in person, handing out flyers. We have some in the hallway this morning, using social media like Facebook and sharing some of our church Facebook pages post about Vacation Bible School. We encourage and invite everybody to be inviting others to our Vacation Bible School that starts next Sunday evening. We'll start with a picnic at 5 o'clock, and then on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night, VBS will run from 6 until 8 p.m. Wednesday night schedule is a little bit different. You can see those details in the newsletter. But we've got a really fun week planned, but also a week of learning and worship and encouragement for all ages. We'll have classes for all ages, but obviously we're especially using VBS to encourage and strengthen our younger ones. In association with next Sunday's picnic, I want to highlight a few things. The hot dogs and potato salad and baked beans have been spoken for next Sunday's picnic. So what has been asked of all of us is to bring chips, cookies, and you can bring fruit, but especially grapes, because grapes are consumed in high quantities by children, and they're easy to store. They make for an easier fruit to be used for VBS. So cookies, chips, and grapes especially, if you could bring those next Sunday. Everything else will be ready for the picnic. We'll have some instructions for some other things we might need throughout the week, but that will especially be needed for that Sunday. Let me also say this. We have enough 2 liters to maybe start floating an ark. So we don't need any more drinks to be brought. We appreciate the 2 liters that have been brought, but we do not need any 2 liters for quite some time. So no drinks, please. But if you could help pitch in some way by bringing chips, cookies, grapes, that would be appreciated. If you can help in other ways with food throughout the week for Vacation Bible School, please see Erin Dean. She is our point person for that, overseeing the food, and we appreciate that. But we have lots that will be going on, and you'll start to see probably some things transform around here, especially as next weekend approaches. I'm excited about our theme and some of the things we have planned for the children, and I hope you all are as well. I'll go ahead and tell you our theme is going to have to do with God being the master builder and some of the greatest things that he has built and continues to build, and how that should be building us up as well. This morning we continue our series that we'll be doing for the next several weeks. Our theme for 2018 is The Spirit Gives Life, and this series of sermons is born out of that, even though It's called The Killers, and it talks about death. Sometimes we have to acknowledge that if the Spirit gives life, what are the things that take life away? What are the things that can destroy me spiritually? Even if it might not kill me physically, what are the things that can cause me to lose the real life that God has always intended for me through His Son? As I've thought about this series, I've thought about comparisons to our physical lives and our physical bodies and even the things that kill us physically. And I looked up on the CDC this past week the things that are the highest causes of death in the United States. And some of the things on the list are the things you hear about on the news or you see pharmaceutical companies advertise medicines for. But I'll be honest with you, the thing that's number one, while if you were to really ask me to think hard, I might think, oh yeah, that is the highest killer, the thing that causes the most death in the United States, it's not the one that I really give as much thought to or appreciate its danger or its power. It's heart disease. Now, you hear heart disease and you're like, oh yeah, you know, that kills a lot of people. You know, that sounds bad. And I'm not here to make light of heart disease. I'm actually here to tell us we need to recognize that it's a serious threat to our lives physically. But, you know, when I hear it, just speaking for myself, it doesn't sound as scary as cancer or Alzheimer's or other things that a lot of times we hear those things, we're like, oh, wow, you know, that's really scary, that's really concerning. We hear heart disease and we're like, yeah, you know, a lot of people have it, a lot of people live with it, and it's just one of those things. But that's the danger in many ways with heart disease, is that it can creep into your life, and many times, as some of us know, you can be living with heart disease and not even know it. You might not recognize or appreciate the symptoms that are going on with your body, many times because it's just a gradual kind of thing. And yet it's still the number one killer of people in the United States. This morning, we're going to talk about a spiritual killer that I think in many ways, while I can't look on a website and say, what are the top 10 spiritual killers that destroy people's souls? I don't know how we could ever quantify that. I have a feeling that the thing we're going to talk about this morning in many ways is like heart disease, because it can creep into your life. It can gradually build in such a way that you just don't appreciate it. And you might even look around and say, you know what, this is just a common thing. Everybody does it. Everybody has it. We just know this is part of life. You just put up with it. And then before you know it, you don't realize it has killed you spiritually. You still might walk around and be alive physically, but spiritually you're dead. You're empty. You're a spiritual vacuum because of the damage and destruction this thing has done to you. The passage that John read for us from 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it talks about the things that killed the Israelites, that actually took their lives as they were traveling through the wilderness. And that passage that he read for us, it highlights a couple things. We're like, yeah, those are serious killers. Those are things that can do real damage to you spiritually. One of them is idolatry. You hear that word, you're like, yeah, we don't need to be worshiping any idols. That's big, bad stuff. Another one, sexual immorality. We talked about some of that last week when we thought about Esau and some applications of his life. And we're like, yeah, you don't want to go down that path because it can destroy you spiritually. Idolatry, sexual immorality. And then in verse 10 of that passage that he read, there's one, we probably read that passage like, just keep reading. We don't even recognize or acknowledge that it's listed alongside idolatry and sexual immorality. And that's grumbling or complaining. Or the word I'm going to use this morning is criticizing, criticism. We're going to go back to an event in number 16. It's called Korah's Rebellion. That's how we maybe in Bible classes title this. The damage and destruction and death that took place in Korah's Rebellion. And I'll be honest with you, as we think about the major events, as the children go through the wilderness, we're probably like, yeah, you know, that was a big deal, but maybe we don't appreciate its value and its purpose because we think, well, you know, the cause of it, it's just so common. Actually, later in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy chapter 11, in writing about some of the significant events in the wilderness, as Moses writes that, he mentions two things. Now, if you were to ask most of us, what's the most significant event in the wilderness? If you were to ask me, I'd say, well, it's when the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. That's when God really demonstrated his power. And that's right there in Deuteronomy chapter 11. One of the big events in the wilderness. But you know what the other one that's listed right alongside that? Is Korah's rebellion. God is using this moment in this period of time and this condition of the people's hearts spiritually to say, I want my people from this point forward to always pay attention to how serious I regard the sin of grumbling, complaining, of being critical. And if you don't believe God takes it seriously, well, you need to read Numbers 16. We're going to look at it this morning. And think about how this rebellion unfolded. And let's begin just by looking at the source of criticism and set the stage for the events that are going to take place in Numbers chapter 16. Now, before this, a common thing that took place in the wilderness are the Israelites complain over and over and over again. And there's a degree to which they've already experienced some punishment. God has already told them after the spies have been sent into Canaan, and the 10 spies come back and bring a negative report, and the people believe him. He says, listen, because of all your grumbling and complaining, you're not going to get to inherit the promised land. This generation is not going to. The next generation will. They still didn't get the lesson, and that brings us to Numbers 16. Let's read verses 1 through 11, because it really helps us appreciate what's taking place. Now Korah the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. I know it's a lot of names, but it says all these people got together, they took men. Verse 2, and they rose up before Moses with a number of the people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, you have gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he said to Korah and all his company, in the morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses he will bring near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korah and all his company. Put fire in them and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi. And Moses said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him? Well, here's what we have. You have Korah, especially, verse 1. And I'll go ahead and mention, Korah is a Levite. He is a part of the tribe. And that, by the way, would have made him a cousin of Moses and Aaron. And he and all the Levites had responsibility of taking care of the tabernacle. Now, Aaron and his family had a special responsibility. Aaron as the high priest and the descendants after him. But the whole tribe of Levi had special care and oversight of the tabernacle, of the religious functions, and everything associated with it. And for some reason, Korah, and this gets to the source of his criticism, was jealous of Moses and Aaron. And when we think about the things that we complain and grumble and become nitpicky and critical about, a lot of times, I'm not going to say all the time, but a lot of times, if we were to be honest with ourselves and investigate, where does this come from? Where does my complaining and grumbling and critical spirit come from? It comes from jealousy. It comes from looking at somebody else. And for Korah and those associated with him, they look at Moses and Aaron and say, who put you in this position? Why do you think you're better than anybody else? And by the way, read all this chapter and find one place where Moses and Aaron think they are better than anybody else. They've been called to a purpose. They've been put in a position of leadership and service. But Korah says, hey, all of us around here, we're holy. Why do you think you're better than us? And that's the way jealousy works. It looks at somebody whose position, whose opportunity, who maybe whose influence or the sway and leadership that they possess, they say, I could do it better than you. You shouldn't be in this position. And I know if I were where you are today, I could do it better. And so instead of just owning our jealousy, what do? We nitpick. We complain. We tear apart decisions. We tear apart personalities. We exaggerate things about other people. Sometimes they might be true, but sometimes they're just not true at all. But we find a reason to try to exalt ourselves above somebody else. There's a quote that George W. Bush, in a speech last year, it's going to be on the screen here. He said this, and when I heard him say this, I thought, man, this just speaks to so many things in life. He said, too often we judge other groups by their worst examples while judging ourselves by our best intentions. Ain't that the truth? So many times when I look at other people, it's so easy for me to complain and criticize and nitpick and grumble because I look at you or I look at others and what I look for the faults. I look for the mistakes. I look for the flaws. I look for any little thing that I can tear apart and maybe even make a much bigger deal out of it than deserves to be. Now, don't ever do that to me, because I want you to judge me by my best intentions. Korah here says, hey, you think you're holy? I'm just as holy as you. Well, come on. Let's get real. You know enough about Korah's character in this chapter to know he had a blind eye when it came to the flaws in his life. But that's the way we often operate when it comes to being jealous of others, or wanting to tear others down, or nitpick, or criticize, or look at things in their life and find a way, how do I knock them down a peg or two and lift myself or exalt myself over them? Because I want you to judge me by my best intentions. You know, sometimes I make mistakes, but you know, my heart was in the right place. So you need to give me the benefit of the doubt, but now you don't deserve it because I know better. When we think about jealousy, you know what the real source of jealousy is? It has a lot less to do with you and me. Now, that's involved. It has a whole lot more to do with me and God. When I look at you and I think that you are in a position or that you have some privilege or you've been given things in life that you don't deserve or that somehow you have what should have come to me, you know who I'm ultimately mad with? It's God. Because God hasn't settled things the right way. God hasn't dealt a fair hand to me. And I'm going to take that out on you, and maybe I'll take it out on him as well. But you know, Moses gets that. You look at verse 11, the last verse that I read. Moses recognizes this. Moses recognizes the source of Korah and all of his company's jealousy. He says, therefore it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. Now Korah's speaking out against Moses and Aaron, but Korah's problems with God. And Moses says, what is Aaron that you grumble against him? What's Aaron ever done to you? If you've got a beef with God, well, you need to take that up with God. But you maybe also need to inspect what's going on in your own heart. But that's the source of this criticism. And I dare say that's the source of a lot of criticism today. And if Korah could have only appreciated and recognized his own position and station in life, he has been called out by God himself. Moses tells him, he says, is it not enough for you that you are part of Levi's descendants. You are part of this really exclusive class that has a special service you render. And that's where a lot of our jealousy comes from, when I don't appreciate what God has given me and the place and station in life that God has placed me to make the most of that. So I look for something to criticize or someone to complain against. Next thing we see is the spread of criticism. That's the way complaining and grumbling and criticism works, isn't it? I've got a grievance, and you know, it's so easy, it seems, when I am nitpicking and complaining and criticizing, all of a sudden I start finding other people who've got stuff to complain about as well. It's like the complainers and critics, they gravitate towards each other. And I think in many ways that's what takes place in number 16. I won't read verses 1 and 2 again, but it begins with Korah, and then it continues with Dathan and Abiram and On, these sons of Reuben, and they took men. By the way, in verse 2, they get 250, and they're looking for people in positions like them. But I bet behind the scenes, doesn't come right out and say this, I bet behind the scenes, it's like, I got something to complain about. I'm going to see, what's David got to complain about? And what's Oscar got to complain about? What's Jeff got? And all of a sudden, we start feeding off of each other. The next picture on the screen here, hopefully you can see this a little bit. This is how the tribes of Israel camped. When they went through the wilderness, there were times when they just set up camp. And they set up tents. And you had some to the east, some to the south, west, and north. But what's interesting is you had the tabernacle in the middle, and then you had the different descendants of Levi surrounding the tabernacle. But I say this to point out something. Korah, he's a descendant of Kohath. This group of priests, they camped to the south of the tabernacle. And then down here, this was the camp of Reuben. And the others in verse 1, they were descendants of Reuben. Now, number 16 doesn't emphasize this, but I find it interesting the proximity of Korah to these others in Numbers chapter 16, verse 1. It would have been a lot easier. There had been more opportunities. You know, at nighttime, sitting around the campfire maybe, I'm just going to wander from my people and go down here to Reuben and say, you know, Moses and Aaron, just not doing a very good job, are they? They think they're better than everybody else. I'm just as good. You're just as good. We're all just as good. What do you think about Moses and Aaron? Well, you know, now I come to think about it, I've been hearing some things. People have been talking. Everybody's been talking. Everybody's been whispering and grumbling about Moses and Aaron. And actually, if you continue in verse 12 of number 16, Korah's complaint earlier that we read has more to do with Moses and Aaron's leadership. But you read about the others. Verse 12 says, "And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, 'We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up.'" The nature of their complaint is a bit different. They include some of that stuff that Korah said, but they also, they build up the general complaint. As you read through the Exodus, the one thing you hear the people complain about over and over and over again, "Have you brought us up into the wilderness to kill us? Back in Egypt, we had it so much better." And all of a sudden, you find some complainers, and we can pull up the baggage and the criticisms and all the stuff. Here's what everybody's been saying over all the years. Here's all the stuff that we've heard whispered behind the scenes. We're just going to bring up all that trash right here. And all of a sudden, the criticism spreads. I don't think necessarily Korah and these others had the same specific complaint. All they had in common was the criticism, the complaining. And that made them allies against Moses and Aaron. And that's how criticism and complaining and grumbling and a negative disposition spreads. James speaks to this in James chapter 3, a passage well known to us. It'll be on the screen, but you can turn your Bibles if you want to. James writes, "So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell." It continues, "For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness or the image of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so." Does that not sound like a description of the rebellion in Numbers 16? Just let it spread like wildfire. Let the complaining, the grumbling, and the criticism, just let it flow. Because we've got it out for Moses and Aaron. But what they didn't realize was they were being destroyed in the process. They weren't hurting Moses and Aaron. Yeah, maybe to some degree. Ultimately, they were destroying themselves. And they were being consumed by their hard hearts and by their negativity. And that brings us to the solution. Talked a lot about the problem, but what's the solution to criticism? If I'm the critic, if I'm the one that's complaining and grumbling, in many ways I need to go back to what Moses' original words to Korah was. Is where you are in life not enough? Is what you have in life not enough for you? You know, when I enter into seasons of my life where the negativity cancels out all the good things in my life, you know what's happened? I've taken a small portion of my life, and sometimes it actually might be something that is negative. Sometimes there are things in life that aren't as they should be, and sometimes there are things that maybe need to be addressed. However, if there is something that genuinely needs to be addressed, I need to go about it the right way. Jesus in Matthew 18, beginning in verse 15, says, if there's something that legitimately needs to be addressed, you know how I do it? I don't go into the camp and start talking to everybody. I don't look for somebody else who has another complaint about the person or the situation that's been getting at me. I go to the source. I do it privately. I do it respectfully. I do it in love. And if I'm not willing to do that, you know what I have found? It's not that big of a deal. Not everything in life that gets at me, not everything that's negative deserves to be addressed. There are some things I just need to let go. Whether that's by forgiving somebody or just recognizing that not everything in life is perfect. But if it is something that needs to be addressed, I do it the right way. But so many times I found out, based on Jesus' words in Matthew 18, this isn't a big enough deal to really go to somebody about. That tells me I need to get over it. And the other thing that I find, that one little thing, I have focused on that one thing, and I have failed to appreciate all the good things and all the blessings that God has given me in life. We live in the most blessed society on earth. We give that lip service. We say that all the time. And sometimes, especially on a week like 4th of July, we will say, we are such a blessed people. And it's good for us to appreciate that. But if we are so blessed, you know what we should do? We shouldn't spend so much time complaining and picking at each other and tearing each other down. And criticizing about sometimes some really petty, insignificant stuff. Because once we do, we will be the ones who are consumed. Yeah, we might be hurting somebody else, but spiritually, you know who's getting killed? I am. I'm doing the most damage to myself. Korah actually had it pretty good. He was already a Levite. He was an insider, if you will. He probably understood things about God that some of the others in the 12 tribes didn't fully understand or appreciate. It wasn't good enough for him. But if I'm the critic, I need to appreciate my place and station in life and what God has done for me. Now, if I'm the one being criticized, how do I deal with that? Let's pick up in Numbers 16, verse 28. And Moses said, "Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord. If these men die as all men die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord." And as soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up." And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. That's serious stuff. But here's what we learn from Moses and Aaron, those who are being criticized in the moment. Moses says, "I'm going to let God be God. Here are my critics. Here are those who have it out for me." And they say, "Hey, I'm not supposed to be in this position." He says, "Well, let's let God be God." By the way, God has been doing a pretty good job of being God for thousands of years. And so when somebody's picking at me, it's not my place to say, "Well, I'm going to settle the score with you. I'm going to fight fire with fire." I need to let God be God. Now, with Korah's rebellion, God settles the score in the moment. It doesn't always work that way. But I need to trust by faith in who he is and what is just in his eyes. And again, Moses in this passage seems to be saying, "This is what I've been called to do, and that's what I'm going to do. If you take issue with it, I'll let God deal with you." That's pretty admirable. There's a lot of wisdom in that. What's sad and maybe even more tragic is other people within the camps of Israel still don't get the lesson. You continue in verse 41. "The next day, but on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of the Lord.'" I'll tell you this. If I just saw a few hundred people being swallowed up, I probably wouldn't keep complaining. I would like to think that. But that's what they do. In verse 42, "And when the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting," that's the tabernacle, "and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. And Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Get away from the midst of the congregation, that I may consume them in a moment.' And they fell on their faces. And Moses said to Aaron, 'Take your censer and put fire on it from off the altar and lay incense on it and carry it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun.' So Aaron took it as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly, and behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the affair of Korah. And Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting when the plague was stopped." I highlight that passage not just so that we see the conclusion and the continuation of the people's criticism, but also to highlight Aaron's character. You know, if I was in Moses and Aaron's position, and I had suffered all the unjust treatment of my fellow countrymen and all their complaining and criticism, and they wake up the next day and they're criticizing me even more, and God says, get back. My judgment's coming. You know what I probably would have thought in the moment? They're getting their just desserts. Let it spread like wildfire. You know what Aaron actually does? He intercedes for the people. Now, yeah, nearly 15,000 people were killed, but a whole lot more could have been killed had Aaron just sat on the sideline and just watched it. He rushes to the scene to keep more destruction from taking place. Why do I highlight that? Even for those who criticize us and who have it out for us, we are still to do good to them. We are still to be for them. And when we have opportunity, if we can in some way intercede or intervene or bring peace or preserve life, even if they're our enemy, we do good. Isn't that what we learn all throughout the gospel? And we see it here in the character of Moses and Aaron. The solution to criticism isn't that I criticize you back. It's not, oh, you want to say this about me? Well, guess what? I've been keeping in my back pocket all the things I have against you and all the stuff other people have been saying about you as well. That's not going to help anybody, is it? It's not going to help our society. It's not going to help our nation. It's not going to help our families. It's not going to help the church. We've got to be for each other. Because if we're not, we very well might find out we're killing ourselves. That leads us to a final passage in Galatians chapter 5. As Paul writes this, I don't know if he had Korah's rebellion in mind, but it certainly applies. He says, "For you are called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now listen to this warning. "But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another." And then he gives the ultimate solution. "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh." Walk by the Spirit. Live by the Spirit. Appreciate who God is in your life and what He is doing for you. And when you do that, you know what you won't do? You won't gratify the desires of the flesh. I won't be consumed with my petty jealousy and bickering and complaining of you or of things, because I'll appreciate who God is, what He's done for me, and I'll actually be for you and not against you. Because when I'm against you, I'm ultimately killing myself, allowing the destroyer to destroy me. But we're here today because we want life. Not just life that Christ will give us when He returns, but a life right now that rises above the junk and the pettiness of this world. A spiritual life. This morning you can have that life in the Spirit by coming to God through His Son. If you've never become a Christian, if you've never put Christ on in baptism, if you've never had your sins washed away, because for whatever reason, maybe because you've held on to all the baggage and all the bad stuff of this life, it's time to let it go, and it's time to come before God and ask for forgiveness and have Him cleanse you and make you whole so that you can live by His Spirit. This morning, if you need to become a Christian, we hope you make that decision. For those of us who are Christians, not just with one another, but with everybody in the world, let's not tear each other apart because we're ultimately destroying ourselves. If you need to be restored to life this morning, we're here to encourage you in whatever way while we stand and sing this song.